Welcome to the XA Podcast, the show that brings together the people that foster inclusive innovation across Southeast Asia. My name is Belinda Ong, and I am the Managing Director of the XA Network. Every episode, one of XA's members will lead a fireside chat or panel discussion with other members, founders, or investors that have shaped the tech ecosystem in this vibrant region. If you like what we have to say, please follow or subscribe to our show. And do remember to tell your friends and rate us 5 stars so others like you can find and benefit from all of our great content. Show notes are linked in the episode description, and you'll find notes and additional resources there.
I think all of us who are at XA, we feel very passionately about working with phenomenal founders. And so today really is our honor to host Roland and Rexy as our guest speakers for the very first installment of our Lunch and Learn for 2022. So Roland and Rexy are the founders of Kumu, the largest live streaming community app for Filipinos around the world. And since the launch in 2018, Kumu has passed over 10 million registered users across 55 countries. They recently closed their Series C round, bringing Kumu's total funding to over 100 million. Now, we were doing a lot of research on both Roland and Rexy, and I cannot recommend enough checking out some of the other podcasts that they've done, because I had a great time listening to them over this last week. But prior to Kumu, Roland built a career as a growth engineer with a track record of helping acquire millions of customers for Fortune 500 and high growth companies in the States. And after exiting in the Valley, he engaged in humanitarian work in the Philippines, where he was inspired to build a tech company to have higher positive impact on the country. Particularly loved the story of how Roland and Rexy got together. And I think it's rooted in how they feel about giving back to the community. And that's something we'll definitely explore during the Q&A. And as for Rexy, prior to Kumu, he founded Kaya Collaborative, a program that connects the Filipino diaspora leaders to high impact organizations in the Philippines and supported global entrepreneurs' roles in Ashoka and Endeavor. So Roland, Rexy, welcome. We'll start it off kind of with your story, right? So in 4 years, Kumu has become one of the most successful social apps in Southeast Asia. We'll talk a lot about Kumu, but you both have this really inspiring story of how you ended up meeting and co-founding Kumu. Could you share with us how two founders that grew up in the US ended up in the Philippines running the largest live streaming community app for Filipinos around the world? We'd love to start with that founder journey and story.
Wow. Thank you so much for having us. Having that like feeling in my heart right now, where I feel very honored and grateful for this opportunity. Yeah. You know, originally I'm actually Filipino American. So growing up in Los Angeles. And so when my mom raised me, I never really got to really fully explore what it meant to explore the Filipino side of my identity. So I had an opportunity to study abroad in the Philippines. And when I went through that exchange program, there was this like life-changing experience where I felt more at home in the Philippines than back home in LA. And similar to what you alluded to in the previous you shared, is after graduating from college, experiencing being an entrepreneur and having that exit, I finally had the resources to finally go back home to the Philippines. But most of it was mostly in NGO work and humanitarian work. So a lot of like anti-sex trafficking work, clean water projects, poverty alleviation, and things like that. And so going back and forth, I had this cadence where I was in the Philippines doing nonprofit work. But when I went to the US, I was mostly engaged as an entrepreneur or more as a business person in technology and advertising. And so it was actually during that back and forth cadence when Rexy had founded Kaya Collaborative, he reached out about his nonprofit that he founded, taking Filipino students from all the best schools. You know, he was at Brown at the time, Filipino students from Harvard, Stanford, and then taking them to the Philippines during these life-changing experiences. So, you know, very similar to like that movie Ratatouille, when he told me what he's doing, it reminded me of my life-changing experience in college. And I just knew in my heart, I wanted to work with him. And that really set the foundation of what eventually became this collaboration for Kumu.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess on my side, right, you touched on a bit of the work that I was doing before Kumu. I think the through line that helped led to connecting with Roland and having these conversations about like how can we do this at a bigger scale that led to Kumu was this, I think one, just understanding of an excitement about where the Philippines was at and what the future had in store for the Philippines as the economy was moving to digital, as the people's, this young population was taking on more and more of a role in not just kind of local economy, but globally. I think there was one piece of it that was just like this macro view that the Philippines was on the verge of just a lot of growth over the next few years. And I think a more specific kind of view on Filipino talent and urge to build things, which in that context was more around like building businesses and nonprofits that I did in my previous work, but also more kind of extracurricularly, I guess, this like Filipino culture and Filipino musicians and Filipino stories, the Filipino talents in film and TV, all these things that were starting to kind of pick up more and more year by year, that started to get a sense that actually Filipino creativity can make a mark at a global level.
Yeah, because to Rexy's context, it was actually his work, the Philippine ambassador to the US. I had dinner with him in Los Angeles, and he was really inspired by Rexy's work. I mean, imagine a Filipino college student rejecting their job offer at Amazon to move to Manila to start an AI company. Or instead of being an investment banker in New York, they would decide to help a family business in Manila. You know, a lot of these stories coming out of Rexy's work as a through his nonprofit. But when he was telling us about, okay, look, we appreciate your passion for the Philippines and your NGO work, but digital transformation, fourth industrial revolution, all the changes that are happening here. Roland, you're a technology entrepreneur in California. What if you created more technology jobs in the Philippines? What type of impact could you bring to the country? And it was really that type of inspiration where you're noticing like, okay, one, you do, let's talk TAM. You have over 100 million people and the median age is Gen Z millennial. You have billions of dollars being spent on internet infrastructure, and you have Vivo, Oppo, Huawei, Xiaomi basically releasing iPhone 7s for the cost of $100. And you're seeing a certain macro effect where it's just like, wow, there is this opportunity that, you know, Rexy and I have always dreamed about engaging the diaspora to really help develop the Philippines. It was really felt like a perfect storm to just, I don't know, walk away from everything and just move to the Philippines.
Amazing. Thank you both for sharing. So look, I think what's very clear is one, your passion for the Philippines, and also two, interplay that both of you share. I think it's so clear that there's so much respect and admiration for each other. And you know, one thing I'd love for you to advise us on is like, what do you think a good co-founder relationship looks like? We are angel investors. We meet with hundreds of founders. We've backed over 100 founders at XA. We'd love to understand what's so special about the Roland and Rexy relationship, and what should we be looking for in terms of other co-founders who are going about trying to change their countries or their regions with amazing technology products. So we'd love for you to comment on that just a little bit.
Yeah, so one of the things that we've noticed, and something that our Series C investor also had recognized, is it what Martin Escobari, this kind of dynamic, the dynamic duo dynamic of a co-founder where I love to tell stories. I love the passion. I love recruiting and building teams. And I remember first looking at Rexy going, okay, I do not know how to read a contract. You know, like the way that he engages with our legal counsel, to his strategic mind and his ability to build consensus where maybe sometimes I kind of shoot then aim in my approach. I think that a lot of times it's just really recognizing that symbiotic nature where we do complement each other a lot across a variety of, because, you know, when you look at those key things at the time, one of our first advisors, Dado Banato, a key venture capitalist who was Filipino-American, was advising us, is really looking at these key things before thinking of funding. One is your technical advantage, two, your operating plan, three, your team, and number four, most importantly, is the timing of it. And so the more that we're doing deeper thinking around these four key elements, you start to see how Rexy and myself are really complementing each other. And at the same time, looking for other co-founders to plug in a lot of those key kind of concerns that Dotto brought up before we even think about funding.
Yeah. I mean, I think also the, what we call it Roxy, right? The Roxy dynamic is, I guess, within Kumu, not specific to Roxy, but something that maybe not accidentally is also the DNA that's shared within the core leadership team and how we work with our key leaders. And I think it's really, for us, it's helpful to have overlap is in like, one, just shared vision and like shared, you know, being excited about like 90% of the same things in the context of the business, right? And where it could go. Two is just kind of respect and being on equal footing. I think that's where, I mean, Roland and I are, like, Roland is 10 years older than me and has 10 years more experience than me, but it doesn't feel like that when we're kind of creating ideas and having conversations. And so I think that also is something that people who are younger on the team appreciate. And then three is just, I think shared pace and urgency is also really important, where for me and Roland and for our leadership team, it's important that we all are on the same page about how important getting to these particular goals are. And I think if we're able to kind of have overlap and strong overlap between those three, then you can really kind of complement each other in the specific actions and activities and skill sets. Where we've struggled is where it's like either there's not a sense of equality, or there's a misalignment in vision, or there's one person is taking things a lot more seriously than the other.
Yeah, to Rexy's point, that level of trust on the key fundamentals, like, you know, on shared vision and just really on the urgency to execute and just make sure that, you know, we're able to do that, allows us to then kind of specialize in particular key focus area points that really, you know, move the needle on things. So, like, for example, in our case, me spending probably more time on growth dynamics from a marketing perspective, or maybe spending some time on first time user experience and things like that. Whereas, like, on content bets and things that really migrate communities like that, there's a lot of trust that, you know, Rexy's doing that. But even though with that said, we're so intermingled that, for example, I have a personal relationship with, like, folks at Miss Universe. Technically, that's a content bet. But, you know, in terms of, like, working with an organization like that, I would step in, or Rexy jumping in and noticing that maybe there might be something wrong on the customer acquisition. So there's a lot of, like, respect and clear communication, especially with our core, with Crystal, our chief product officer, you know, a couple of key leaders on the team.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing. You know, it's so clarifying when we hear that from successful co-founders like yourself, and it's something that we get to apply in the future. So I'd like to switch gears just a little bit to the amazing product that you've built, right? So from what we gather, Kumu began as a messaging app, right? So we'd love to get that trace route from messaging app to live streaming app. And one thing we were also very curious about is, do you think Kumu was responsible for shifting behavior? Or do you feel that there was an unmet need that you then solved for when moving from messaging over to live stream?
That's actually a great question. I mean, I can talk about that first initial. So, all right. So we're traveling around the country because Rexy and I know that we can't build the product on our own. So we went full on Avengers, my cousin Claire, Black Widow in New York, to James, Nick Fury in Silicon Valley, and then Hulk, Bruce Banner, Angelo, you know, who's driving content in Los Angeles. You know, we all move. And thinking about the particular problem we're solving, we were actually really inspired by the consumer internet plays prioritizing local TAM. So we saw what WeChat did in China as the basis of the economy or ecosystem that they built, or say Kakao, the amazing ecosystem that they built, but with their chat. We also saw VNG Corporation, which was a huge inspiration, building a multi-billion dollar app ecosystem on top of the Vietnamese TAM and looking at what they did with Zalo. So we were just like, okay, well, I think we're fully aligned on mission that we want to build a consumer internet champion for the Philippines. So why don't we launch a messenger app? And oh, it was a fail. It was like, it's so toxic on our Facebook. 3 years too late. Ha ha ha. This is a crappy version of Viber. All that. And we're like halfway through our funding. Like, oh crap. Like what the heck? Like no one likes the messenger app. But what I love about how distributed our team is, and one thing that we got advice was, leave enough room for the community to define your product. And there was something about our intern, Mika Reyes, who we love and adore. She moved on to LinkedIn and now is starting her own startup. And as an intern, she was like, hey guys, I'm taking a qual analysis of our cohorts and I think we're a live streaming app. I'm like, wait, what? What do you mean we're a live streaming app? She's like, I'm looking at it. Like, it's a feature in the background. It's not even the core part of the app, but look at these retention metrics and look at the way that people are spending time on the app. And at the time, you know, when we were kind of researching Pivot, because this is a big decision, right, to actually move away halfway through funding. And what really inspired us was the Bourbon Pivot. They started out as a messenger check-in app. And when they saw cohorts and around photo sharing, photo editing, and when they rebranded as Instagram, it gave us that kind of like, okay, that confidence that there's something special about what's happening to this particular audience. So to answer your second part of the question from behavior change, it was really more as we were talking to the users, and on the creator side, they're like, look, Kumu's, I love this live streaming feature because I'm not pretending like my life is perfect on Instagram. I'm not hiding behind a keyboard and engaging to toxic behaviors like you see on Twitter and Facebook. There's something real, raw, and authentic about creating live content. And what was really interesting from the aha moment is the recognition of the content of, from a viewer side, you're not recognizing content through views, or you're not recognizing content through likes. You're actually recognizing content in the form of a microtransaction, very similar to like a digital version of busking, watching someone play the guitar on the street and recognizing the content with a dollar bill in their guitar case, but really doing that digitally and really forming the product and community building experience around that particular behavioral hook. But yeah, Rexy, maybe, or yeah, if you have anything other, but that was kind of like what was going on there at the time.
I think what's interesting thinking about it, which maybe touches on a different question and theme, but like, and I think there is an element of luck involved in it, but where we did end up finding product market fit also ended up being a place where we found a lot more kind of product market founding team fit, where to the degree that, you know, I mean, it was a timing thing, but like if there was like any sliver of a chance that a new messenger app would work in 2018, we probably weren't the team to execute on it, because that's something that's a lot more of like just tech infrastructure and just like utility driven, right? In terms of communications and maybe some amount of delight in design, but that's not really what makes a messenger app win. Whereas for us, like Roland's very much like a growth marketing and like very passionate about like authentic connection type of person. I'm very much like a media geek and creator economy, somebody who's very interested in that. Angelo, our head of content, was like personification of Hypebeast. He just like likes cool things and making cool things and absorbing cool things. James is a natural community builder. And so that just ended up being, in retrospect, the right team to put together like a live stream focused, creator focused consumer app versus a messenger app.
That's such a great story. Thank you for sharing. And so I just a follow up here, you also have this delightful framing around being the Disneyland of social media. Could you talk a bit about that? Explain it to us. And also, we'd love to know the why. You know, why, like, where did that come from? But also, why did you decide to double down and move in that direction?
Yeah, you know, one of the core things that really inspired us, Disneyland, that a lot of people don't really appreciate, is how strict their security is. If you don't look safe or just don't look right, you won't even make it out of the parking lot, let alone the front entrance and purchase a ticket. The cameras involved and really this devotion and dedication to safety. And because of these core values that we rallied around, primarily the three things are safety, positivity, and acceptance, the way we moderated our community to content moderate, now offending content gets shut down within a minute of launch, which is something we're really proud of. It's a hybrid between our content moderation team and image recognition technology and all of the sort. And to do that allowed us to do something that I think is really hard, which is creating a safe place online. I don't know any platform, even though that we're focused on Filipinos, to have several million active users, but still have this like overarching sense of safety. And like quick qualitative, like a couple of days ago, I was live streaming with my mom with three Roman Catholic priests and a whole slew of people across the socioeconomic spectrum, very wealthy business owners and very poor farmers in the province. And there's something magical about creating the safe place where people could spend time together. And if you look at other platforms who do utilize live streaming or do have that social aspect, the lack of content moderation creates a huge plethora of toxic and bullying behaviors that, when we talk about the Disneyland of social media, sure, yes, people talk about the entertainment and our ability to migrate amazing content experiences into the app, but it's actually our devotion to creating a safe place online that is much more why it's... So to be clear, we didn't say the Disney of social media, it's Disneyland. And it's because Disneyland is such a safe place and positions us as a social entertainment. It's like, look, if you're bullying and talking about politics and all that nasty stuff, that's not Kumu. You do that on Facebook. Or if you want to pretend and do some things like just go to Instagram and stuff like that, like this is the place to be yourself, to be accepted, and to do it in a positive place. So there's an unapologetic approach to the way that we cultivate community on the app that I think is something that still keeps me up at night, actually. So.
Yeah, and I think what we've seen, which we didn't, wasn't necessarily what pushed us in the direction, but was as an overall trend that we're in a way part of, is the last generation of social media was a lot of like trying to be like this one or like a handful of things for everybody, right? And very kind of horizontal, winning Instagram, winning this format, Twitter winning this format, Facebook winning the newsfeed format. And I think what's we've seen is already happened like in a much deeper way in China, and it's starting to happen globally, is it's starting to become like every social app is like the full stack of features before a particular kind of use case and archetype and type of community that's being built. And so I think we're not gunning for a future where everyone is on Kumu for everything, right? I think that the existing social platforms and new ones are going to be coexisting no matter how well we execute. So in that future, we want to be like the best place for, if I want to go for positivity and fun and authenticity and meeting new people, be able to be the place that provides the best experience for that.
Gotcha. Thank you both so much. So look, I think educational to hear how you've thought through so deeply about all of this. And even just staying on that theme of, you know, kind of talking about your relationship as co-founders, moving into product, I think one of the other legs of any entrepreneur's journey is fundraising. So this will probably be, I think, the last question from me. And then to everybody on the call, we're going to open it up for you to ask Rexy and Roland your questions. But, you know, we noticed that you've been a company that has raised funds from local VCs like Foxmont, regional VCs like Open Space, and then international funds like General Atlantic. So we had a two-part question for you. The first was this mixture, was it deliberate? Is it something that you put together so that it would help you strategically in expansion outside of the Philippines? And the second is, you know, you closed the last round like in the heart of the pandemic, right? So what was that like? And what do you see is going to happen in the next 12 months, especially given some of the interest rate sort of chatter that's coming out of the US right now?
I think what was deliberate was kind of looking particularly for funders where there was a clear view on how they could be a partner in the growth of the business. And I think that was something that, you know, even in the seed round, it was Summit Media on the media side and Foxmont in terms of people who built a venture at an early stage that had gotten to growth eventually. And so we got a lot of out of those relationships, and then that kind of formed our view that led to kind of Open Space being our Series A investor, also being kind of known for being very intentional about the value add that they bring in. And then that fed into, I think, SIG being kind of having that particular perspective from ByteDance and just like social in the Asian context, and then General Atlantic for being kind of having a reputation in terms of being really roll up your sleeves and add value when they come on the cap table. So that's always, I think, been our philosophy that I think just started. I think we got lucky in the early ones, and then we enjoyed what we got out of it. And so look for more and more of that type of DNA and the investors that we brought in. I think the other thing that was common with all of that is that probably from Open Space onwards, we talked to the funders at least 6 months, if not in the case of Open Space, maybe a year and a half before the round closed. And so they're really long-term relationships where got to know each other, got a sense we had a shared vision and could work well together long before the round closed. So for the General Atlantic, the Series C in particular, it was I think 18 months before the round closed when we started, when the introduction happened.
And just to provide context, I mean, specifically, I think too, Rexy, is just people's comfort around the Philippine TAM, right? Mm-hmm. I think that there was a time, you know, so we're Endeavor Entrepreneurs. Something that Linda had shared with us is just this historic thing that happened, not just because, you know, as a global organization, they noticed too, right? Both the Mexican ecosystem and the Philippine ecosystem is turning a corner, while traditionally Indonesia and Brazil, respectively, were like the big heavyweights in those respective regions. And, you know, shout out to Justin Hall over at Golden Gate was this kind of perspective that maybe a lot of the big fish kind of eat up the small fish before there's even a chance to even raise. And we were very, very lucky to have someone as influential as Liza Golconway from Summit Media and that family to really take an investment in the company at a respectable seed round kind of international stage and really set the tone for a company, a firm like Open Space Ventures. And, you know, Hyun's passion around media as a former founder of Asian Food Channel, to put a bet on us so that we have an international term sheet that actually allowed the local investors to not say, okay, I'm going to give you $500,000, but I want 80% of your company, to, okay, you know what, we'll follow the term sheet of Open Space Ventures, and it enabled us to attract other local investors, because I think, we were the first ever startup to receive funding from three of the top five wealthiest families, according to the Forbes Richest List. And a lot of that, I want to just give a lot of kudos to, first, the perspective that Justin gave us from Golden Gate, and eventually moving forward with Open Space to empower us and put us in that position, because it just created this kind of snowball effect that after us and then SIG's lead and then the C, you just start seeing a fundamental shift in people's recognition and understanding of the Philippines. I mean, when we rose our Series A, it was rare. Now, I think there's 10 people raising a Series B. GCash just raised $300 million. Our cousins at Grocery, we still share the same office with Summit, with Grocery. They just announced their Series C with KKR, yesterday. And so there's just a lot of movement happening. And again, just from that dynamic, it's been really cool to witness. And I think there's a lot of luck in that. But I think back to Dotto's advice, luck came from us recognizing the timing of that opportunity and just moving forward with that.
Thank you so much for sharing.
Before we close, as a reminder, show notes are available on the link in the episode description. So do click through to get a summary and related resources. We hope you liked the episode as much as we enjoyed bringing it to you. And if you did, please do spread the word about our podcast and take a second to rate us 5 stars. Thank you for joining us today. This was Belinda with the XA Podcast. See you next time.